Hey, Off Besties. This is a Weird News Roundup from Odyssey's Something Offbeat podcast. Each week, we dive into strange stories from Odyssey newsrooms across the nation. This week, our weird news is all about nostalgia. We're headed to a photography museum, a toy museum, retro pizza joints, and more. We'll also sit in on an interview with John Taffer of the long-running series Bar Rescue, now entering its 10th season. To get things started, we'll join Kelly and Bob Phillips of Own the Road with Kelly and Bob out of Odyssey Station KRLD 1080 in Dallas. Here's Bob now.
Take a trip to Bruce Klein's Photo Antiquities Museum in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and you will take a trip back in time. His collection and his stories go on and on. And trust me, we couldn't get enough of them.
He is a walking, talking history lesson of one of the most enjoyable parts of life, preserving our moments and our memories.
When did you first become fascinated with all of this?
It was probably in the 1980s. Yeah, in the 1980s, I enjoyed looking at things like tintypes. There was actually no place that you can go and see them. I mean, the best photographic collection in the world, in the United States, is owned by the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C., but the majority of that is in caves. So I thought it'd be an interesting thing to actually show all the processes so people can see the evolution of photography and actually get to see how photography changed over the years and why. And so I started to put a little collection together, and then it grew and grew and grew.
How many photographs do you think you have?
I have no idea, but a lot.
What is it about photographs that keep people intrigued day in, day out, year after year?
Well, think about it. You know, a photograph is recording a moment in time that creates a memory that can last a millennium.
Wow.
You know, when I look at a photograph, I can look at a photograph 100 times, and then the 101st time, I see something different. And every time you look at something, you notice something, either something's out of place, or a certain smell, or a certain look, and then you can only imagine what took place in that photograph. I mean, you know, again, you're gonna have to guess what was going on.
I get a feeling you can get lost in all of these pictures.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you could, absolutely you can.
I mean you, though.
Oh, I can get lost in them, yeah.
The quick story about Kodak pioneer George Eastman and another name I think you might recognize.
In the 1940s, he runs into a man that's helping airplane pilots. In the 1940s, when airplane pilots flew, they had a glare in the horizon. This man built goggles for these pilots to wear. It cut the glare. Well, George Eastman has a use for that in photography. He cuts glare off of lenses, cuts glare off of lighting, and he gives this guy enough money. This guy takes all that money that George Eastman gives him, and he opens his own company in 1948. He calls it the Polaroid Corporation.
Polaroid.
And his name is Dr. Land. There's a photo of Dr. Land down there. And Dr. Land was a scientist, inventor, a futurist, and he wanted to have a lot of patents. So what does he do? He opens his company in Boston. And into his research and development department, he only hires MIT students. So when he dies in 1991, he has the second most patents of any man in the world, other than Edison. And what he invented for the goggles, we call those polarized sunglasses today. Give you an idea on affordability. If you had a daguerreotype taken in 1839 and you put it into 2025 money, or money today, the cost back then would be $1,000 for one. But by the time that you started taking a negative and you started making them on paper, from the 1856 to 2025, the cost back then would have been about $10. So now it's affordable to the masses and not just the wealthy people. Very, very popular, and that's why you see a lot of Civil War soldiers have them, because it was right in that time frame.
And I noticed no one smiled back then.
Yeah, so here's the answer. When you had your daguerreotype, I told you it was 30 minutes. You couldn't hold a smile for 30 minutes.
You're going to be moving your face.
You're going to be moving, yeah. Now, even though your eyes open and close, they're open more than they're closed, so it will look like they're open. In reality, I told you that this time frame was about a half an hour. The ambrotype, a couple minutes. By the time they got to the tintype and the CDV, you're in the seconds. In reality, by the 1860s, you could have smiled. But when you looked at the old photographs of your parents and grandparents, no one ever smiled.
Very stoic.
So you thought that's the only way your photograph is to be taken. People didn't start smiling until the early 1900s. 1865, when the Civil War was over, there was photographers that worked for Matthew Brady Studios in Washington, D.C. And now they're out of a job. The war's over, so he doesn't need them anymore. So now what did they do? So already in Washington, D.C., they took out a large camera, a 16 by 20 inch camera, big camera, mm-hmm. and they photographed things like the White House, they photographed the Capitol, things like that. Whatever was in D.C. at the time, back then, in those days, they would photograph.
And this was one of those big wooden...
Photos aren't the only everyday items that can become part of history. Legos that you accidentally step on, old Barbies, and board games can too. If we leave the Photo Antiques Museum in Pittsburgh and make our way to Kansas City, Missouri, we'll find another interesting museum. It's called the National Museum of Toys and Miniatures. Its collection of toys goes back to 1690. But right now, the museum is actually looking for even more toys, and ones that are a little bit more modern. The Dana and Parks Show out of Odyssey Station KMBZ in Kansas City is here to explain.
The Kansas City Toy and Miniature Museum.
Have you ever been, by the way?
Oh, it's phenomenal.
You sent me there, yeah. And it was really fun.
They are asking for donations of your toys.
Mm-hmm.
From the 1980s.
Yep.
This is going to be glorious, you guys. Your childhood is calling. Cabbage Patch Kids, Transformers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Your 1980s childhood is calling. The National Museum of Toys and Miniatures in Kansas City. Mm. Hopes you will clean out your attic and a closet or two and donate some of the toys popular during the 1980s. All toys that are offered as donations will be reviewed by the collections committee and may be considered for possible inclusion in the upcoming special exhibition that is going to be phenomenal.
But read the fine print.
What's the but?
They do not want anybody, please and thank you, just showing up with boxes of toys.
Dumping off your crap, your G.I. Joes.
What they want are photos, emailed in, photos of the item, of the toy from all kinds of different angles. And they want maker's marks. They want a little bit of the provenance around the toy.
Okay, when I moved, I got rid of the Cabbage Patch doll. You guys, I'm 51 years old. They have survived every move. They have survived lots of boxes. And finally, when I moved last time, I'm like, all right, girls. I asked my daughters, do you want these? And they go, no.
Does Big Juicy know?
No, I don't think she does.
Oh. Know.
You know, those were a huge part of my life. And if you still have... Sure. A Cabbage Patch doll new in box, and you can say this is the provenance that my dad punched some old lady in the face at Kmart in 1984.
On Black Friday.
And this has been in the attic.
That's the stories that they want.
That's what they want. They want the Black Friday story from the North Topeka Kmart.
You know what I'm amazed is not in that story is Star Wars action figures.
Because in the 80s, you would have had those held over from 1977.
Well, but keep in mind... They also released a movie in 1980 and 83.
Well, I think they'll take a look as long as you just send them the email with a photo first.
Well, and the Toy and Miniature Museum in Kansas City, which is on the plaza right off of it, Dana had Tasha take me there one Saturday. They have an amazing Star Wars action figure collection.
Oh.
I mean...
The exhibition. They had everything.
We're talking vintage.
Right.
Still in the box stuff. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
They want Care Bears, My Little Pony, Smurfs. Oh, do you remember the little tiny plastic Smurfs that you...
My brother used to collect
collected?
Those. My brother did, and when he went off to college, threw it away.
No!
Yep. He had it in a really nice wooden case where you could... And it hung on his wall in his bedroom where you could put a Smurf in each little square. And he had all of them. Papa
Almost
Smurf,
like an advent calendar.
What was the girl Smurf's name?
Smurfette.
Smurfette, thank you. And...
Anyone else think it's weird looking back? There was only one
was
girl
only one.
For all of those little blue guys.
There was only one. Where'd they all come from?
Some of the other toys. Pussy. Speak and spell.
A lot of smart.
The Monchichi. Remember?
If you have toys you want to donate to the museum, you can visit toyandminiaturemuseum.org for more details. There's even more nostalgia coming up from this Something Offbeat Weird News Roundup. Stick around to hear about a resurgence of retro pizza shops across the U.S. and an interview with John Tapper of Bar Rescue after the break. Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Weird News from Odyssey's Something Offbeat. On this week's roundup, we're getting nostalgic. Tiffany-style lamps, a full salad bar, and sit-down service are just some of the nostalgic features bringing diners to Pizza Hut Classic locations all over the country this year. According to a January article in Slate, these blast-from-the-past Pizza Hut locations are becoming a cultural phenomenon. A journalist also told the New York Times that he was so excited to see one that he promptly freaked out and swerved right into the parking lot. At Odyssey Station WCCO News Talk in Minneapolis, anchor Jason DeRusha of Drive Time with DeRusha is also on this Pizza Hut Classic party train.
I miss Pizza Hut. I miss the Pizza Hut of my youth. I miss the red plastic cup filled with the one time I would be allowed to get soda. Those sort of checkerboard plastic tablecloths. The stained glass lamps that say Pizza Hut. There was something about that personal pan pizza that you earned after a summer reading that just triggers all the nostalgia buttons. And the New York Times today has a story about Pizza Hut classics. Pizza Hut classics. And there are a bunch of them here in Minnesota. There is some. Just when I say the old Pizza Hut, can't you taste that pizza shows up on your table and that kind of that pan? Ugh, get to scoop it out yourself. You can get sort of a riff on that pizza. Pig Ate My Pizza in Robbinsdale and in Bloomington. They have a pizza that they have modeled after that Pizza Hut pan pizza. But there's something about those nostalgic concepts, and all around America, there are about 60 of these retro Pizza Huts. And I just drove past one this last weekend when I was up in the Brainerd Lakes area, where I saw this old school Pizza Hut. You're like, oh, I want to go in there. I want to go in there. Minnesota has a ton of these. We've got an old school Pizza Hut, and they call them Pizza Hut Classic. There's one in Bemidji.
Inspired by the return of one nostalgic type of restaurant, DeRusha asked his listeners this week what old school eatery they think needs to make a comeback next.
Geez, Jason, do you remember the old Country Kitchen? Their corporate office, I believe, was in Bloomington, right? On American Avenue, right where Mall of America is now, but... You know, it had a great menu, 24-hour service. It had the counters where the guys would come in. Same guy, same time every day. That's where you get all the information. Had the best coffee.
Yes. Yeah, I do miss, you know, when I was, and I grew up in suburban Chicago, so that was a little before my time when that was headquarters over in Bloomington. But I do miss that sort of, that vibe, right? Like that family restaurant sort of feel and vibe. I think that you're exactly right about that being, it's the diner thing, right? Like that's where the info always happens.
That's where it all happened. That was better than the internet getting that information.
It was about equally reliable, though, Dave. Like, still a lot.
It was about, yeah. No kidding. You're right.
A lot of questionable information, but.
All the way, Shakey's Pizza.
Oh, yeah.
The Mojo Spuds. Laurel and Hardy, the banjos. You got it. We, as a kid, we could get up and watch you make the pizza.
Oh, Shakey's. Shakey's is a classic. Isn't it? Is there still one Shakey's around, or am I making that up? I feel like there's still one left.
Well, you know what? They're out in the West Coast, last I had heard. I was in Seattle about... Oh, and I found out there was Shakey's out there. I happened to go to it. And it was outstanding.
So
but
good.
It was in a strip center. It wasn't as authentic as... when I grew up and they had their, you know, their building on their own. But
right.
I went in there and like, yeah, yeah, I've heard people. I do. You know, I've heard it a million times.
Oh, that's pretty good. Thanks, Terry. Appreciate it.
And this made us wonder, if so many people love Pizza Hut Classic, why did the restaurants ever change in the first place? And what about those other beloved restaurants mentioned by Odyssey listeners? Why did they close? Well, the simple answer to that question is that the restaurant and hospitality business isn't easy. John Taffer is the host of reality show Bar Rescue, now airing its 10th season on the Paramount Network. For years, he's been helping bar owners keep their businesses open. Taffer joined Odyssey station KNX News in Los Angeles this week to discuss some of the challenges that bar and restaurant owners face today.
Through 10 seasons of this show, what lessons have not been learned? What mistakes are bar owners still making, or restaurant owners still making after all these years that you notice?
Filth. Irresponsibility still exists. But, you know, after the pandemic and then the inflation, these past few years have been rough. So, you know, this season they're in debt, right, from being in a hole during the pandemic and then dealing with elevated costs, et cetera. So this season is the most stressful I've ever had because they're in deeper than I've ever seen before. These people are in financial trouble. They're in default on their leases. They're behind on payroll taxes. They're behind on all of their other expenses, and creditors are chasing them down. So it puts a lot of pressure on me.
It's not just the little guys. We're seeing big chains like fast food restaurants, yes, and pizza locations. Papa John's just today announced it's
300
closing.
Units.
300 units.
And that's not unusual today.
Yeah.
You know what happened? It's interesting. Over the years, the focus in the capital markets was growth, growth, growth. How many stores are you opening? How many stores are you opening? So we built and built and built. Then the market says, well, now let's see earnings. Well, they opened all these lousy stores. They pushed it past where they should. So now they have these subpar stores. And now they're pushed to show earnings. So they got to close a lot of these stores. So we're seeing a contraction with drug stores, retail stores, restaurants, almost across the board.
Quantity over quality.
Yes.
Yeah. So with this season, here we are. We're several years past peak lockdowns, and there's that long tail effect of these restaurants. You know, they might have gotten some government help, and maybe that might have run out, trying to get people to break some habits they might have made during the pandemic to stay in and get them to go back out again. Maybe they discovered some things about staying home and not going out that they got comfortable with.
Yeah.
How do you break that trend and get people to support this industry, support the economy again?
Well, you got to have a great place. I mean, at the end of the day, the pressures are causing failures because you can't operate by default anymore. You got to be better than that. So even things like your music, your plate presentations, your drink presentations, the connectivity of your staff, these things mean more than ever before because of a few factors. GLP medications. People are consuming less.
Ozempic.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's creating a certain impact for sure. Then only on top of that, people aren't going out as much. Look at companies like DoorDash and these delivery services. Would we have ever expected that they would have done this volume post-pandemic? But it continues. And then look at cannabis. Cannabis is more of an antisocial drug, whereas alcohol we have together. Right? Mm-hmm. We share together. It's social. Cannabis you tend to use on your couch at home. It's a very different. Right. So there's a lot of factors that are working across the industry now. They're getting hit expenses and they're getting hit on a revenue side.
Well, John, I'm going to tell you what I think is the number one factor. I think you might agree with me here. It's so expensive.
Yeah,
people
too.
Just don't want to spend that kind of money because the prices keep going up.
Yeah, I just went to a hamburger stand on the way here. I had a hamburger with a friend of mine, just cheeseburgers, at an outdoor stand. Two Cokes, one order of fries, two cheeseburgers, $54.
You're kidding me.
No.
Oh. Well, and this is a trend that we see no end in sight here.
Yeah.
And it's simply because, well, they're not trying to gouge these people. They're just trying to find a price point to survive.
Yeah.
And you have to it goes back to the point you said earlier. You have to create that value from what you're offering so that, you know, it justifies spending. Yeah. I don't know if you could ever justify spending more than $50 on that kind of meal. But in a general sense, just to, you know, make sure people are getting what they pay for.
Well, there's two kinds of value. There's absolute value and perceived value. Absolute value is your burger's $10, my burger is $8. I beat you on absolute value. But perceived value, your plate looks better. Your burger might have a different flavor to it. Maybe you have a better cheese or something. So I might have a better perceived value out of your $10 hamburger than my $8 hamburger. Yeah. So those two factors have to work together, which means we're back to what I said before. We got to work harder.
Yeah.
The plate's got to look better. Everything needs to be better.
The show, the new season on Paramount Network of Bar Rescue, you mentioned a lesson that these owners don't learn is keeping a clean place is filth. Yeah. And that's just discipline, right?
It is discipline. Yeah. But, you know, every failing business is a failing owner. And I can build bars all day long. That's easy. It's fixing them that's the challenge of Bar Rescue. I have to make them act differently, go to different places, react in different ways, have different priorities. I got to change their behavior. That's not easy. So that's my biggest challenge, is changing them.
Thank you so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup from the Something Offbeat podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to Own the Road with Kelly and Bob out of KRLD 1080 in Dallas, The Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City, Drive Time with DeRusha out of WCCO News Talk in Minneapolis, and KNX News in Los Angeles. You can find these shows and stations on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen to and subscribe to the Something Offbeat podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.